Welcome to the Yacht Rock Show with your captain, Eddie Gantz, with First Mate Joe Carlisle and Samir at the wheel. And here's your host, Eddie Gantz.
All right, folks, this is a good one tonight. They're always good, but this is a really, really good one tonight because I've been wanting this interview for quite a while. I'm a big fan of this guy. He's a great mega songwriter, singer. I'm talking about the lead singer, and I believe he's probably what he'll correct me if I'm wrong. The main leader of Maxis. I'm talking about. Let us welcome Mr. Jay Kruska to the Yacht Rock Show. How you doing, Jay?
Hi, guys. Joe and Eddie, good to be here, man. We are in the age of tech dilemmas.
Yeah, you mean we're at the age of tech dilemmas. <That's funny>.
That is much more accurate.
Right.
much more accurate. Yes.
Oh, God.
No, awesome. I think you're accurate. Although, you know, Maxis was an equal 5-man group, even though, you know, I basically wrote all the tunes or co-wrote all the tunes, and I was the lead singer. But, you know, there was no one leader. You know, it was a democracy, so to speak. You know.
I see.
Yeah.
Who put the band together? Take us back. How did Maxis start?
Sure. Well, let's preface it with, it's amazing to me that anyone cares.
Oh, you'd be surprised.
Yeah, this is kind of a tight window, right, that we're squeezing in. Like, you didn't think anybody would ever like come knocking about this stuff, but
listen, guys, no, I'm grateful to talk about any music that, you know, and you know, I could easily spend the next hour with you talking about my buddies Lukather and Joseph Williams new records. I have no problem with that. Those are two very close pals, and I actually have Joe called me to write and produce a couple of tunes on his solo record. So you know, it's just nothing but a love thing there. But anyway, back in around 1980, I met with Robbie Buchanan and Mark Leonard, who had just come off of doing The Rose, the movie. With Bette Midler.
Oh, yeah. With Bette Midler.
Yeah, they were her band, and I believe at that point, Robbie was the music director of the band. And somehow we were introduced, and it had been, I don't know, at least five, six years since I had done my own record. I did a little solo album that was produced by Michael Omardian, the very brilliant Michael Omardian.
Oh, yeah.
A few years prior. And anyway, long story short, you know, there was a connection sort of in dialogue musically. And, you know, I always have a little batch of tunes. Some of them are good, some not so, but I always have them. And so we just started noodling around rehearsing and then, you know, talked to a couple different drummers, did a few demos, had a guitar player that was terrific. For the first round of demos, and I don't know if you guys know that we made that album twice.
Oh, wow.
So the strange incident was that we had a producer named Stuart Levine who helped us get a deal through an A&M subsidiary. I know this is sounding boring, but I promise I have a point. and we did an entire record with I would say at least 75% of the songs that were on the ultimately released Warner Brothers Maxis album, and something went wrong with the subsidiary of A&M, and the label kind of fell apart after we made the record. So so long story short, you know, we got it to Warner Brothers, and then suddenly Omardian popped up again in my life, which I was absolutely thrilled about. And we literally made the record again, but with two or three updated or improved songs. By the way, am I talking loud enough or too loud?
Yes,
I can't quite tell.
Yeah, you're fine.
Okay,
fine.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Anyway, so that was the story of that. And so, yeah, it started with three guys sort of having a chat. And then Don Perry joined the band. He had also done The Rose and that Midler band with the guys. And, of course, after Maxis, I think for the next 20-plus years, he was the drummer for Jethro Tull. I mean, just, you know, amazing musician, right. Amazing musician. But right. Then, you know, an old sort of buddy of mine that I had known along with Lukather since they were, like, finishing high school was Mike Landau, who's, you know, I mean, if I called him a genius, I'd be understating it as a guitar player. I think you could probably find Luke agreeing with me on that.
He
and
has.
And then he joined the band, and that was the one and only Maxis album. And, you know, to this day, there's a tiny little world fan base that is very exciting. You know, there's no particularly record sales to speak of, but it's just wonderful how some music survives, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the resurgence of the Yacht Rock thing, right, Ed?
Exactly.
In the Yacht Rock world, it's huge. Yeah, well, you've got a lot of fans in the Yacht Rock world that love Maxis. Oh, my God. I get requests all the time for this song, you know, the main one. Yeah. Are you singing lead on all the songs?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Very nice.
And that muscle, due to inactivity, those vocal chops, because, you know, I think you guys know that for the last, I don't know, 25, 30 years, my main bread has been buttered, so to speak, by scoring movies and television shows. I just right. found a love for it, and I suppose a knack for it. And right. The phone kept ringing, and, you know, use it or lose it. And it kind of happened a little bit with my vocal chops. But, you know, even if I tried to do those songs again, I would either have to do them like a fourth or a fifth lower key-wise,
right.
Or I'd have to have someone hold my testicles while I was singing.
Right, right. Yeah, you're not unlike our last guest from last week. Steve Picaro moved on to doing a lot of scoring work. We had Steve Picaro on last week.
I don't know.
I didn't get around to ask him that stuff. But.
Steve is also a good buddy. I mean, if I could, because I've known the Toto boys from the beginning, from before the beginning. My first concert after that little solo album in 1974 was opening for the Average White Band.
Oh.
And my band was David Page, whoa. Jeff Porcaro,
Hungate.
and Lee Sklar.
Oh, Lee Sklar.
Lee Sklar.
Wasn't Hungate on Gruska on Gruska?
Hungate was on Gruska on Gruska, yeah. But he didn't do that gig. For whatever reason, it wasn't. I don't even know the reason. But that's, I sort of met those guys pre-Toto. And, you know, I thought they were just as brilliant as they come, and a very solid sort of camaraderie, friendship, and mutual respect. Well, mostly in my direction to them, I think. But, it was just great. And then those guys told me to head over to Joe Porcaro, Jeff and Mike, rest in peace, both of them, and Steve's dad's garage, because their little brother had a band that was doing all the songs from that little first solo record of mine. And I went, wow, sure, I'll go hear a little high school band doing this. And I shit you not, by the way.
They were doing it better than you.
They were doing it better than the band I was on the road with. Because really? it was Steve Porcaro, Mike Landau, Carlos Vega, another rest in peace drummer, who I worked with a lot subsequently after that. And Lukather, Landau, and Steve Porcaro. Give me a break.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? So, you know, they were all just monsters. And so it goes so far back. And then, of course, I guess about 2 years later, I put a little band. I hope I'm not being too long-winded, guys.
No, we love it. We love it.
Cool.
Don't feel inhibited. Go ahead.
Okay, all right. About 2 years after that, I formed the little band with Lukather, Mike Beccaro, and Carlos Vega just to go play a little club locally and do some tunes and just jam and play.
Right.
And, I was singing the songs, but, you know, mostly just marveling at the musicality and just chops and beautiful nature of who was on stage with me. And that is where Jeff and Paige saw Luke and had the light bulb of, hey, we're forming Toto. Let's go deeper with Luke. And the rest is history. I think if you ask Luke, he might confirm that story.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, so I mean, to me, it's like a badge of honor that I helped him get the gig.
right.
Wow.
Anyways. So let's go back to Gruska on Gruska. Eddie, is there anything that you play from the Gruska on Gruska? Is that Yacht Rocky?
Oh, I don't know if I've ever visited that. Don't ever do it.
Don't ever do it.
Yeah, I didn't know what I was doing, honestly.
I love your self-deprecation on your website in the awards column. You have over 24 sold.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And then for Max's to you, it went quadruple tin. And then your 84 solo album, which one of us is me, you have triple aluminum it went. Which is very, very funny.
You know, I'm so happy you guys appreciate that.
That's funny.
You know,
I do.
It's a little easier to poke fun at that if you have a little bit of success in some other areas.
Absolutely.
And I fortunately, you know, I had a few hit songs and I was staff songwriter and, you know, all this whole TV career. So when I was doing the website a few years ago, I thought, well, of course this is silly as far as that. So let me be the first guy to point out how silly it is. And, you know, I don't make fun of it musically other than Gruska on Gruska, of which, and I'm no self-deprecating here, I was absolutely the worst thing about that record because all the musicians were great. O'Marty was great. Some of the songs, Carlton and Dean Parks.
Dean Parks.
Hello.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
I was
Green
on drums.
Sure. I was 21 and I was just going to school learning from these masters. And so I can't really listen to it anymore. So I beg you never to play it on your show. But
I'm sorry, if there's something Yacht Rock, we're going to have to.
I don't think so. I don't think so. But I'm always thrilled anything that you might play other than that.
We'll check it out.
Okay. Well, it's all about Maxis. I'm telling you.
Like I said, this window, Eddie wants to focus on the window that nobody really wants to talk to you about.
Yeah, but I do. And I know that my listeners, they want to know. Yeah. So Maxis, you recorded the album. And what happened once the album was done? What happened?
Well, you know, it came out and there was some excitement because, you know, we were on Warner Brothers and, you know, I mean, I think they definitely dug the record and, you know, the folklore of the moment is that we got caught up timing wise in what was a pretty big payola scandal
in the early
80s. It wasn't us. It was our promotion guy that got caught up in it, and it was a mess. And right, I'd say within, I don't know, a few months of our first single release, which I believe was The Higher You Rise, the shit just hit the fan. And, you know, honestly, you know, even though we were getting played on that day's version of sort of adult contemporary, you know, a couple other songs, I think Keep a Light On and, you know, Nobody's Business. A few things were getting some local airplay, but nothing resembling a hit. No big...
Nothing charted, Jay?
Nothing charted.
No.
We never charted. And, you know, what we were told was, you know, we just... Because, you know, it was a dark couple of years for the label, other than, you know, I don't know, Christopher Cross within a year of that killed. So, you know, look, honestly, I have no sour grapes whatsoever. There's so many great things that I love that weren't hits or weren't big commercial sellers. So I'm cool with it, you know. So, you know, it goes like it goes. It would have been nice to have a little charted record, and then we maybe would have had the incentive to keep going. But we only made that one record, you know, about a year after that. You know, kind of a few of us decided to just go out and explore different things. And Warner Brothers then let me do my little solo album. And then Robbie Buchanan went on to incredible career of arranging and session musician on, you know, dozens of things. Same with Landau. I think Don Perry, of course, you know, traveled the world 50 times with Jethro Tull. But that's the basic gist of that. You know, it was a one-shot deal. And it's interesting that, you know, we're in the neighborhood of 40 years later, there's still a connection. So that's a beautiful thing.
It really is. Yeah, no, it's a shame because those songs, like Nobody's Business, it's a great song, man. Great tune.
Thank you.
Yeah, doesn't it have the highest Yacht Rock rating on the what's with these guys, the Yacht and Yacht List?
Yeah.
It's got a 9.4 or something, 94.5.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, it's up there. Yeah.
I had no idea. You know, my collaborator on that was a Canadian recording artist at the time, who's a great songwriter and a wonderful, just creative person, Lisa Dalbello. I mean, I don't know if any of her, she made two or three records in those days. And I think her first album was produced by David Foster. I'm sure it was, because I went to a couple of sessions. And, you know, she was just brilliant. But yeah, she was my collaborator. We wrote that together. And so, yeah, it's wonderful. I mean, really, go ahead.
How long did it take for you to record the Maxis album? How long did it take?
The second one, well, because Omardian is, you know, so efficient and smart and musical, and because we had done it once already, we moved through it pretty quickly. I think we were basically done and might have written a thing or two in the late stages, but we were basically done in the neighborhood of a couple of months, maybe a little less.
But help me understand. So you said you guys recorded the album over again. I don't get it. What do you mean?
Yes. Remember what I said at first, which was that we got a little record deal with a subsidiary of A&M Records. And Stuart Levine produced an entire Maxis album that had, I'd say, 3/4 of the songs that are on the actually released album. And then when that whole situation blew up, you know, we got the deal at Warner Brothers and re-recorded the whole record again, but with, you know, obviously with Mike Landau. So that was the difference. The guitar player on the first record was also a very good guitar player, Bruce Gowdy. And but, you know, Landau and I went back, and we technically did it a second time, but, you know, with the Michael Omardian special sauce.
So he was producing it? Michael Omardian was? Or he was?
Yeah, he produced the record, yes.
Okay. Because I know Michael Omardian was also involved in Kraken, correct?
Gosh.
Kraken, what's that?
Kraken, that was a late 70s band, Kraken, C-R-A-C-K-I-N.
Yeah, I recall the name, but I don't know his whole credit list. I mean, biggest, you know, he was a session player on tons of stuff, including a bunch of Steely Dan, because, you know, they had always the geniuses playing on their records. And but then, of course, he Donna Summer, he had a giant couple of hits with. And then the Christopher Cross stuff. And I don't know his whole resume, but, you know, he's, you know, one of the monsters.
Right now, if somebody wants to buy the Maxis album, is it a Japanese release on CD? What's the story on that?
Yeah, it is indeed. There is no I mean, of course, we got released pre the days of CD. We were only vinyl and cassette.
Right.
So when I got contacted, I don't know, I think the first re-release was maybe in the neighborhood of 15, 20 years ago for all three of records that I was involved in, Gruska on Gruska. By the way, I never thought of that name or approved of the album cover, so don't blame me. Maxis, which I was very, very proud of, and Which One of Us Is Me, which has its moments. They were all re-released on CD, and I was incredulous. And I think it's been a second release now in the last 5 or 6 years. But yeah, I'm sorry to say that there is nothing available in any other formats unless you find some collector. And
right,
you know,
Go ahead.
I was just going to tell a silly little story about things like that. About a year after the Gruska on Gruska album came out, and I was back down to earth because I was this 20-year-old kid in my third year of college that got a record deal. And and it's not that I got arrogant. It's just that I went, oh, this is how life is going to go. And of course, you know, we all get some form of our asses kicked along the way.
And, you got that
and,
right.
Yeah, right. And you know, any profession does. So you know, a year later, when nothing happened, I was a little more sobered and just grateful to still be inching my way in the industry. And I went to like a dentist appointment or something like that. And I go to check in, and you know, the lady says to me, "Oh, Jay Gruska. Oh, did you have a record out?" Last year, I went, you know, I got very, suddenly my chest got a little bigger and I went, yeah, thank sure. you. And she goes, yeah, I bought it last week for a dime.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, God. It's making sure my couch doesn't wobble. It's on the underneath the one leg of the couch.
Exactly.
Oh, Jesus.
Exactly. So, you know, humility is a good thing.
True.
Absolutely. Wow.
So now what about Which One of Us Is Like, Which One of Us Is Me, Eddie? There's nothing on that you checked out? There's a lot of, I mean, come on, the Players alone. I'm seeing names here. Well, the Picaros, I'm seeing Mike Picaro, Joseph Williams again, Nathan East on bass. I mean, there's got to be something there in 84 that's screaming yacht rock. You haven't checked that out?
They're probably, it's worth checking out, but you know, the reason I called it that and the reason that I eventually went into film scoring is because I'm a bit of a musical chameleon in that I've never really had a style. I like so many types of music, and I want to work on so many types of music that it wasn't a cohesive record, and that when I was about three quarters of the way through, I went, oh, geez, you know, they're not going to know how to market this, so I might as well go the full distance. And, you know, I said, Which One of Us Is Me, even though the song is technically not about that, but, you know, the title resonated for that. Because, you know, there was a rock tune and a little R&B vibe and a little alternative kind of music vibe. And then my daughter was born, and I wrote an instrumental piece for, you know, with orchestra in mind, and did it. You know, it's a minute with a minute and a half with an orchestra on a pop record. So, you know, I was correct. The label didn't quite know what to do, and then onward and upward. Wow. So I would just leave it to you guys. There's nothing on it I can recommend to say, oh, that's yachty enough. But you might find something. There's a song called Cancun that might fit into the easy listening aspect of the yachty thing.
Right.
And I'm pretty proud of that one. You know, good players. I like that one. So it's worth a check. Okay. But you know, you guys always have such good shit going on. I'm not gonna taint that world.
You're the consultant. We have to ask you.
Are you kidding me? Yeah. No, it's funny. The Max's album, I compare it to, I'm sure you know the name Robert Byrne.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, he's no longer with us, but yeah. a hell of a songwriter, right, Jay?
Absolutely.
Monster songwriter. Well, Byrne and Barnes have an album too that is so yachty. Again, like Max's, has a bunch of songs that are so yacht rock, and it's crazy. And it was never, that album was never even released in the States.
You're
nothing.
Kidding.
Well, no,
wait,
I'm not.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think of how I've heard his and their stuff over the years. And so when was it done? When was that album done?
I think it was in 81. Amazing. 81 or 82, something like that, man. Max's was 81, right?
Max's was 81, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think it's the same year.
Interesting.
Yeah, man. Yeah, very.
You guys had a guy on a few months ago, and I am so bummed that I don't remember his name right now. I had never heard of him, and you played like 3 or 4 cuts and analyzed, and he blew my mind. It was so funky. It was, you know, of course yachty, but it had Steely Dan overtones, which, you know, anytime you hear changes like that.
Who's he talking about?
Maybe Dane Donahue. Was there an interview as well, or just we just played it?
No, you just played him, and you guys raved appropriately. I'm trying to think. I may be able to, you know, maybe I figure out a way to go back into your archives and see if I can dig it out. My apologies for remembering.
But I'm intrigued now. I'm like, oh my god, I wonder who he's talking about.
I listened, you know, the whole, you know, for whatever 40 minutes that I listened, it was only about him, and he was brilliant.
Damn, shit, yeah. Joe, who could that be?
Could be anybody.
Oh wow,
Donahue doesn't sound familiar. But what I'll do is I'll try to retrace my steps and see if I can find it.
So yeah, let's talk about the other stuff that Jay's written for other people.
Well, I know you were involved with Chicago. Tell us about that.
Right. Oh, well, that was thrilling in this sense. I saw them, you know, when I was in high school. I snuck into the Whiskey A Go-Go and saw Chicago Transit Authority.
Right.
They were not Chicago. They were Chicago.
That's right.
Transit Authority. And
that's right.
My head fell off of my shoulders. You know, I was just completely blown away. So, you know, 10 years later, thereabouts, I write a song with Joseph Williams.
What You're Missing.
Exactly. Which was a really cool demo, by the way, which Joe sang the shit out of.
Joe's a monster vocalist.
Isn't he?
Oh, just my God.
Greatest.
That latest album is sick. Oh.
It's sick.
Black Dahlia? Oh, my God.
Wait, so I assume you know that I wrote that with him and produced it.
You did?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's monster.
I wrote it with Joe and produced it.
Oh my God, Jay!
I thought you were. You
should be ashamed, Eddie.
I'm not ashamed. I can't know everything.
I mean, love that you picked that out.
Oh, brother, that song is insane.
Oh my God! Talk about yachty. We went there.
Oh, brother, you nailed it. That's modern yacht. I'm loving it.
I'm so happy you.
Oh,
you
Jay.
Didn't know and picked it out.
No, I did not.
All right, you made my day. And
awesome.
Joe and I had a blast doing it. And then the other song, which isn't yachty because it's a little bit more of a style Randy Newman personal thing, and I wrote it with my wife. I wrote the music, she wrote the lyric, is called No Lessons. But you gotta dig Joe's vocal on that.
Oh, okay. I'm not familiar with that one.
Yeah, just go and check it out. It doesn't have to be for your show, but just go check out the way he sings this piece.
I got to tell you, I've got Black Dahlia on full rotation on Atlantic Coast FM, and people love it. Absolutely.
Oh. Yeah. Does he know what that is? Explain what that is.
What do you mean, Joe?
Explain what Atlantic Coast FM is.
Oh, Atlantic Coast FM is the new home of the Yacht Rock Show. It's a radio station. and that we launched a couple of months ago, and it's blowing up.
I love it.
And it's going to blow up even bigger. I can't talk about it now, but through emails, I'll let you know what I'm talking about.
Please do. And do I find it online?
I'll send it to you. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to send you I'll send you through the phone. I'll send it to you.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, listen, of everything that you guys have been so sweetly, complimentary about, that one takes the cake for me, that you just kind of picked it out as a song and didn't know that I was in it with Joe. So that's cool. I love the fact
that I didn't know and how this happened. That's awesome.
Yes. He's a monster.
Brother, you are a hell of a songwriter, I must admit. Without throwing smoke up your ass, I mean, you are a badass. Believe me, I've been following you for years. Joe, you know it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We've been following you. Jay Gruska, that name, please.
Thank you, Eddie.
Absolutely, you. Brother. Absolutely, man.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, man.
It's an honor. And, Joe called at the beginning of the pandemic. And, he has no bigger fan than me, Joseph Williams. I was there when in his first round with Toto in 1987-ish or whenever that was.
Right.
That song he wrote with Paige Pamela is like just kills me every time.
Oh, that's a great song.
Right?
Yes. Yes.
We love those two albums.
Yep. He called at the beginning of the pandemic and said, I'm gonna do a solo record because, Toto's taking a break. And, do you want to... I don't know if you guys know that Joe's first solo album, which was 1980, either 3 or 4.
No, I'm familiar with it. Yeah.
I produced that.
Is that the one that has Cool Night?
No. It's a blue album cover. It is his first solo album ever.
And he's like on a ledge high up.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So that's how far back we go. And that was, other than doing a few other little projects, songwriting projects here and there, that was the last time we had worked with me as his producer. So he's turned into just completely great producer. He's been co-producing the last couple of Toto outings, a few years ago. And he produced this solo album that we all are talking about right now, other than the two cuts that I did. So he called and said, you want to co-write something and produce it. And I said, I'd love to co-write something, but why don't we co-produce it? And he said, no, I want you to do it. So that's where Black Dahlia, 3 days later shows up. And then he said, I need a ballad on the record. And, I said, all right, let me think. He goes, and I don't even have to be part of the writer on that. So anyway, long story short, talked to my wife and she had a really good idea. And you guys should hear him though on that. But that whole record kills me.
Definitely. Well, let me tell you, I got to tell you, Black Dahlia is genius. And it's an incredible song taken to another level. The vocals.
Insane.
Thank you.
Insane. I mean,
insane. That's the best I've heard him in years.
Oh, that's so great to hear. Even though, he sets the bar high, but that's
does.
A great thing. Who's playing drums on Black Dahlia?
No.
My daughter.
Get out of here,
Barbara. Wow. Barbara Gruska. Has played with a shitload of people, and she killed it. I mean,
she's a badass.
She's a badass.
A lot of talent in your gene pool there.
I was gonna say, don't get me started on him. That guy. That guy's
Jay,
were
your parents musicians?
Nope. I was the first person in my lineage to attempt to make a life in that.
Wow. Let me tell you, my friend, not too shabby.
Well, a little
not
bit
too
of
shabby.
Thank you, my man.
Yeah, man. So let's go back to Chicago.
Yeah.
So
oh, sorry. You, yeah. Got
yeah,
sidetracked.
No, that's all right.
so right. Joe and I wrote that tune, and then I'm trying to remember. Oh, I know how. I knew David at the time, but I also knew David's sister, who was doing some publishing things for him. James Foster, J-A-Y-M-E-S. You know, great ears, good person, and I forget how, but she heard the demo, and she sent it to David, and David called me, about weeks later, and said, "Hey, I want to cut this on Chicago." At that point, Maxis was making a record. And right. I get a call at Village Recorder, and it's David Foster on the phone. Hey, David. Yeah, man, I love this tune. Want to do it? But you know, I can't figure out this one. What did you do for this change? And what's the bait? You know, what's the dinner? So I just said, oh, that's an E over D, and it goes to an A minor 9, and whatever little muso chat we had in that moment. Right. And then I heard nothing. And about 2 months later, he invites me down to the studio, mm-hmm. cranks it to 11, and blew me away.
Wow.
Still one of my favorite things that's been recorded in terms of a great band with a great producer and great vocal by Cetera and Mike Landau played on the demo, on my demo with Joe, and he did it so well that Foster called him in to play guitars on the Chicago record.
I was going to ask you that. Yeah.
That's an interesting little tidbit.
Love that. I'm loving that. Yeah. Loving that. That is great.
So, Ed, you knew about Tell Me I'm Not Dreaming, right?
You
wrote that.
Ooh, tell us about that.
That's a favorite of yours. Yeah.
Yeah, the Jermaine Jackson song with Michael Jackson.
Was a duet. When I heard it, was, because this was at the beginning of the Thriller mania and the Victory Tour was going to happen. And, there was just nothing bigger on planet Earth than anything to do with the Jacksons, no less Michael Jackson, who was the tip of the spear, as it were. And so Omardian was producing some cuts on Jermaine's solo record, was going to. And he called up and said, let's write a tune for this. And he also wanted me and him to work with Bruce Sudano. Do you know that name?
Yeah. You know? He was married to Donna Summer.
Donna Summer, exactly. Also, he was a recording artist himself. I think
that's
Brooklyn,
correct.
With Brooklyn Dreams.
Brooklyn Dreams. Yes.
Exactly. Yep. And couldn't be a sweeter person. So the three of us wrote "Tell Me I'm Not Dreaming," and then Omardian is going to do the track, and the track was. I don't know how many of these musician names make sense to you, but he tracked it with just him playing keys, Nathan East playing bass, and John Robinson, JR.
He's horrible.
He's horrible, right? Just like
horrible.
The why man waste their money.
Yeah, the man cannot groove at all. So
at all.
So it was the three of them tracking, and Omardian called me in and said, "Listen, Jermaine can't be here. Will you come in and do the work vocal while we're tracking it?"
Nice.
So that was my little thrill, and that was before we knew anything about Michael. We just thought it was just going to be a cut on Jermaine. And then, so the other little scuttlebutt is, whatever. Mm-hmm. Some weeks later, Omardian calls me and says, "Well, I think it's going to be a duet with Michael." And I just fell off my chair.
That's cool.
Nice.
And I begged to go to the vocal session, but they wanted it private. And I understood, but Michael just wanted to do his vocals with, only Jermaine and, Omardian in the room.
Yep.
But it was all good. First time I heard it on the radio, which in that summer of 84 or 85, I forget what year it was, it was played nonstop for about 6 months. all over the radio. And the first time I was driving in my car, and it was one of those classic kind of, you know, stories that probably many songwriters have said or certainly can relate to. I had to pull off the freeway.
You had to pull over.
I had to pull over. And
it's a great song.
It never got released as a single because even though it was number one dance.
It was, right.
In those days, you could not get charted on a pop chart, which we for sure would have been number one. If you didn't have a 7-inch single. And because Michael had, I forget if it was Billie Jean or, you know, one of the 8 or 9 mega hits from Thriller about to come out, he didn't allow it to come out as a single.
Wow.
So it was super disappointing, but it was made up for by how great a performance it was, how great a record it was, and how often I heard it on the radio for the next couple of years.
Absolutely, yeah. Love the song. Yeah. Love it. Tell me I'm not dreaming. Love that.
Exactly. Hey, you still got your falsetto, baby.
I still got it, babe. I still got it. Yeah, I still got it. Listen, there's a guy here that I've... this is a cool thing. Tom Snow.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's another Yachty songwriter, and he's got a song that's very Yachty. It's called "Don't Call It Love," da da da, it ain't enough, da 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 da, da, which is very popular now. Do you know that song?
Was it on his solo album?
That's correct.
He is a badass, and I am a huge fan of his, but you know, he kind of left the songwriting world like 20 years ago or more.
Do you know anything about Tom at all? Like
you co-wrote, right?
We co-wrote a hit song for Amy Grant. Yeah.
Heart in Motion.
Yeah.
Good for me.
Exactly.
All right.
So we had it was number one AC. It was number 7 pop. It was, you know, it was just a fun ride.
Nice,
and
Tom
is just a hit machine in the 80s and part of the 90s. He was just a hit machine, just a terrific, like, you know, as a songwriter, straight to the heart of the matter. He knew how to get right to the heart of the matter, both musically and lyrically, and, you know, was great fun to work with. But I don't know that song, so... tell me the title one more time. I'll write it down.
It's called "Don't Call It Love," and it's really popular in the yacht rock scene. I get a lot of requests for this song. People
Amazing.
Love it.
How cool.
Man. Yeah, it really is interesting. Don't call it love.
Yeah, I don't know where he's been for. I have lost touch with him, but just a great guy. Probably the last time I spoke to him was probably at least 20 years ago.
I think,
I don't want to say the R word, but he might have kind of retired and just moved away from that. I know that he wrote a musical with Dean Pitchford based on...
You know that name.
Footloose, which Dean and... they had a big hit... I think it was with Denise Williams, "Let's Hear It for the Boy."
Oh,
I think Tom and Dean wrote that song. It's a huge, it was number one song, I think, in the, I don't know, maybe the, whenever Footloose was. But they did a Broadway version of it, and I think some, you know, special sauce dollars rolled in, and he said, let me go play golf. Golf a little bit.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, Eddie, did you know about Friends and Lovers? Remember the Gloria Loring, Carl Anderson?
You just took it out of my mouth.
Yeah,
so
you did that with Paul Gordon, right, Jay?
That was a huge song for you, right, Jay?
It was. I mean, Carl and Gloria were great singers, but I didn't like the record. I just didn't like the sound and the way it was performed as far as the band. Even though the vocals were great, and you can't argue with the success of it. And I don't know if you guys know how freaky that time was, because about within a month or two at the most of it going to the top of the pop charts. It was,
yeah,
I think it was number two pop and number one AC.
Right, you're right.
The country version of the same song with Eddie Rabin and Juice Newton went to number one country.
That's wild.
And it was at the same time. So it was like this incredibly thrilling, how did this happen with two different sets of artists on the same song and, wow, you know, different genres, you know?
Right.
So that was a thrilling moment. And I knew when it happened that the chances of it ever happening again were slim, and I was right.
But Jay, I'm intrigued. You didn't like the production of the Carl Anderson and Gloria Loring version?
You know, let me be careful here, because I don't want to disparage anything. Let's just say I liked the country version more, even though argue with the big voices of Carl Anderson, rest in peace, and Gloria. They, you know, they sang it great, and they deserved all that success. But I just liked the musicality and the performance and the arrangement of the country version more.
Well, with all due respect to the producer, this is my opinion. The minute you said that, it's because I agree with you. I was never too fond of the, if I may say, without offending anybody, of the production of that song. So it's funny to, you know, to go there lightly. I don't want to elaborate on that just in case, you know.
No, listen, I mean, you're completely not wrong, even though I'm completely insulted. No, I'm not. No, I think you're absolutely right.
It's so funny to hear you say that, because, Joe, I can't tell a lie. I was never crazy about the song.
I'm surprised. Killer. I don't remember you not liking that song. I thought you were going to be all excited when I mentioned it.
No, I like the song. Never crazy about the production of it.
Agree. It's just kind of compared to other records at the time or other records any time.
Bingo.
It wasn't swinging. Even though it was a ballad, it didn't have a beautiful sort of lope to it. The thing that made it work, I think, was the incredible powerfulness of the vocals.
And a great hook.
I shouldn't be the one saying that, but, you know, it had a hooky, you know, and connected with people as a sort of a love song and all that. You know, it was a little bit schmaltzy, but, you know, it worked.
Now, the song was huge. I mean, let's be real,
It was very big. It was very big for a couple of years. It had quite a lot of, I mean, I still see performances around the world, but, you know, buys a good bottle of wine every now and then.
That's good.
Yeah.
So, glad Jay, how you doing on time? I know you were limited with time. Are you okay?
You know what? I shifted something in case this would happen, and I'm good for another 15, 20 minutes if you guys are.
Okay. Yeah,
oh,
certainly.
Oh, that's excellent.
Certainly.
Excellent.
Yeah, we don't want to keep you if you had something. But.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you. I appreciate that. No,
so
I'm
you're Brooklyn
this,
born, huh? I see.
So you were born in Brooklyn.
I was. But
why does everybody move to the West Coast from Brooklyn?
Well, here's the thing. I hardly lived there. My parents moved... they actually moved to Venezuela when I was around one. Yeah, my dad had a business there with his brother. Not oil, by the way, not oil. Everybody thinks that, you know. No, it was just, he was a businessman with his brother. And they did that. And then when I was about nine, my mother wanted an American education. So we moved here instead of back to New York, even though, you know, I had cousins there and got sort of, you know, East Coast in my veins and in my DNA.
Right.
But I grew up here. I grew up here. Yeah.
So obviously these, you know, people like Neil Diamond and Barbara Streisand, they were all from Brooklyn, but obviously they
Neil
were
Sedaka.
way older than you. Yeah, so was Neil Sedaka. And what about Robert John? Remember Robert John that sang Sad Eyes? Remember?
He was I remember the song, but I don't remember.
Brooklyn-born?
Yeah.
Interesting. You know, Brooklyn had a little juju going on, didn't it? A little
big time
little mojo in Brooklyn.
I'm telling you,
At Lincoln High School.
Yeah,
right? It was in something in the water in Lincoln High School or in the cafeteria.
Interesting.
That is so funny. My mother-in-law lives around the corner from Lincoln High School. It's crazy.
In Brooklyn as we speak, you mean?
Yes. That's correct.
Yeah, got it. You guys are in New Jersey right now, though, right?
Right across the river.
Yeah. You know, Paul Gordon is in New Jersey.
Oh, really?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He's been in New York for the last 3 or 4 years, and then him and his wife moved to New Jersey, I think, about a year ago, and he's right across the river.
You know who's my neighbor here? Frankie Previtt. You know who that is?
Sing the song.
Me.
Now I had the time of my life.
Oh, my God, of course.
Yeah, he's got an Oscar. God. I keep wanting to go over there and hold the Oscar.
Hello, give me a break.
I'll tell you, Frankie is one of the nicest guys, I swear. Joe, you tell him. I love him. Previtt?
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
Oh, my God. The thing that I can't talk about right now is Frankie. Frankie's involved in it, by the way.
Wow, I'm really excited for you.
Thank you.
Because it sounds like it's just going to be the next level of what you've been building here.
You nailed it, Jay.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. Him and I can say the name, Dennis D'Amico.
That sounds another familiar.
Mega producer. One of the sweetest gentlemen I've met in the business.
Somehow connected with Bobby Caldwell, right? You said.
Oh,
and,
sure.
Oh, yeah.
And Giovanni.
Yeah.
Yes. Another Bobby, another monster.
Yeah.
Another monster.
We're hoping to get him on soon too.
Yeah. Want to get Bobby.
He's great.
Yeah. So man, I mean, you've done endless studio work. I mean,
you know, I mostly did studio work because I was connected to the song. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In other words, I didn't get called. Maybe once in a while I get called to play something. I did get called on various things to do background.
Didn't you play
vocals
on Chicago? Didn't you play on the Chicago song?
No, you didn't. No, that's all Foster doing my keyboard parts.
Oh, okay.
Only better.
He called, asked for the chord changes. Remember he texted that?
Yeah.
That's right.
You know, he checked in about that. But, no, that wasn't in my wheelhouse to go in and play great on something that I heard for the first time 10 minutes ago. There are all kinds of geniuses that do that incredibly. I tended generally to be called in when I had something to do with the song, when I wrote the song or if somebody wanted me to, you know, I was doing a little arranging, you know, here and there. I spent about a year, I'm sure you're going to know this name, even though we probably don't consider him Yachty, but he's a legend, Bob Gaudio. Yeah. Bob Gaudio.
Oh, yeah.
I spent a year under Bob, sort of training as a junior producer and doing, you know, little odds and ends for him around 1979.
Jay, didn't he do Frankie Valli?
Are you kidding? He wrote...
Thank you.
Every Four Seasons song.
Bingo. Oh. Right. That's right.
Monster. How about that? He wrote or co-wrote every
didn't
song.
Didn't he do, swear to God, didn't he do that?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Every Four Seasons song. Guy's a legend. Guy's a legend. So
from Bergenfield, New Jersey, actually.
That's exactly right. Exactly right.
Right up the street from me. Like I could hit his house with a rock right now.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, I think considering that Jersey Boys the musical is still playing, I think you would need a rocket to reach his house.
Right.
But anyway,
What about there was another guy, Denny Deontay? Am I saying that right?
Oh,
wasn't there? You know what I'm talking about? Who was the guy that did the Archies? Sugar. Who was the guy that did that?
Right. I don't know. I don't know.
Oh, God.
I don't know who that is.
I know he's from that same time, that same era.
Ron Dante.
Ron Dante.
See?
Ron Dante. Yeah, there you go.
Got
good one, Joe. Yep.
Yeah.
Ron Dante.
Good one, Google.
I was gonna say between the two of you, you make one fucking great brain.
Thank you. Joe and I, we've been I don't want to toot my horn, but I'm a singer, and Joe's a bass player, specifically fretless. by the way.
I'm completely not shocked at this because you guys' analysis and general types of appreciation, it just reeks of being musicians. And, you know, you couldn't fool most of us. You know what I mean? So
thank
it's,
you.
It's pretty obvious.
I'm glad it's getting through.
Jay, you're going to love this one. I got to tell Steve Porcaro, one of the back in 86, I was with my band and we did a showcase at SIR Studios in Manhattan, right?
Right.
We had a bunch of A&R people come down from Warner's, Columbia, you name it. At the end of the night, one of the A&R comes over and says, "You know, great band, but we don't need another Toto." Of course, back then, I was a letdown. Now, what a compliment!
are you kidding me? That's the greatest compliment ever. My goodness.
Yeah, at the time it wasn't. But yeah,
right.
Well, especially 2 years after Toto 4, which was like to me one of the more iconic records of the last 20 or 30 years. You know what I mean?
Right.
Absolutely.
You absolutely should take that as a compliment.
The next time I get Steve Lukather on. I'm going to tell him that, but I did get a chance to tell Steve Porcaro.
Sounds like you're telling everybody that story.
I'm telling everybody now. I saw
on your Twitter feed that I think you had both Joe and Steve on in this last month or two, didn't you?
That's right.
Yeah.
No, not Joe Williams. No, we haven't.
No.
We had Lucas there,
Williams.
But hopefully.
No,
somebody had.
You should.
Somebody had them both on. Somebody had them both on in tandem.
Yeah, grab Joe because. Joe is a very well spoken and funny and great, and he'd be a great interview with you guys, I think.
We look forward to that. Absolutely, Jay.
If you need an introduction, let me know.
You are the man.
Sure.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Wow.
If I can digress for a second, what about Luke's record, Done in a Week Live?
That's crazy.
The level of stuff there. And you know, I went to hung out for one of those 6 or 7 days. And you know, I mean, you know, known these guys forever, and I'm still like a little, you know, a little fangirl in the corner. You know what I mean? So it's all good. It's an honor to see that level of musicianship and stuff. You know,
you didn't throw your panties at the console, did you, Jay?
say that one more time. Oh yeah.
So you didn't throw your panties at the console, did you?
No. They were too. I'll get in trouble. I was about to say they were too moist to do that. I got to be careful. All right, you guys will cut that out.
We can cut that out.
We can cut that out. we'll leave it.
It's all good. It's all respectful. I'm the husband of a wife and the father of a daughter and the son of a mother. So I, you know, full respect for all women.
Yeah,
absolutely. Listen, before I forget, I mean, we're going to get you on again. I believe me, I know we will. But before I forget, I want to ask you, any chance of Max's re-releasing that CD again, remastered? Any chance of that? I got to ask that. Any chance
sure
of that
can,
happening?
Sure, you can ask that, and if it was up to us, we would do it. I don't even think the masters exist, A.
Really?
And B, I'm not so sure that, you know, we have no control over that. It is owned by Warner Brothers. Now, interestingly, you know, both my kids did, you know, a couple of records on Warner Brothers records.
Right.
And so there's a long history there, both my own and just familial, but I don't, you know, they just wouldn't do it. I don't think they would do it because
what a shame.
The main reason is that if someone was to call up and say, "Oh, but you can sell maybe 3 or 4,000 copies."
Right.
They're not going to do it. They're not going to do it.
Oh. No.
The only thing that I, that in my fantasy possibility is that maybe some combination of us would do a little EP But, you know, like I said, my voice is a whole other voice now. You know,
Why don't you drop them, like you said, drop a few keys, grab Landau, grab whoever's available, and do the baked potato on a weekend.
Because, A, the baked potato doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, is it really closed down because of COVID?
Oh, no, the bake does. I'm sorry.
The baked potato.
I was thinking of Dante's, which was a jazz club that we all played at.
Baked potato was thriving.
Oh, no, the baked is great.
Landau's there all the time.
Yeah, Landau. Yeah, I've seen Landau and Luke there a lot. But, you know, because Robbie lives in Toronto. I'm sorry, in Vancouver. In Vancouver. Okay. And Doan, you know, I don't know how much even at this point Doan is playing anymore. You know, if we did something, fortunately or unfortunately, it would go down like this. Here's a song, whether I wrote it with Robbie or whatever the thing was.
Right.
I do my little rough keyboard part. I do a work vocal. I send it to Robbie. Robbie does his magnificence.
Right.
Then it gets sent to Doan. Doan plays, you know, his killer stuff. I have no even idea. The one person that I've lost contact with pretty much since the band broke up is Mark Leonard, the bass player. So chances are it would be someone else because I don't even know what he's doing or where he is. And Landau, of course, I'm still in contact with because Landau did all the guitars on Black Dahlia. So that was incredible. We went to his studio and,
right.
Watched him do that magic. But that's how it would go down. It wouldn't be a thing where we went and played live at this point.
Let's see.
So sorry to disappoint, but that's probably the best thing it would be. And I don't think there would be a re-release unless there was some reissue again from Japan. But, you know, honestly, so that nobody's CDs aren't a thing anymore. It would have to be some kind of streaming reissue.
Download
or a vinyl, vinyl.
Yeah, right. Vinyl's big.
Reissue. Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, I could see that on Amazon, you can get the Japanese CD release of Maxis.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And you know what? I'll talk to the guys. I actually Zoom with Robbie and Doan every few months, and we just catch up. And they're still very close with them, and they're great people. I'll bring it up, and I'll say,
Jay,
what do you think?
I got an idea. What the Japanese, they would release it. They would do it.
I think they would. I think
you're
right.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if you have any other tracks you could throw on it, that would make it even more enticing.
Well, that's an interesting point. Like to add a couple of bonus tracks or something. It's an interesting thought. I'll talk about it with the guys.
There you go. Awesome. Yeah.
In any format, we love playing the stuff and we'll continue to play the stuff.
I very much appreciate it. And
Jay, man, what can we say? We love you. We love you, brother.
It's very mutual, guys.
Thank you.
A lot of fun to talk to you. You're informed and hip and as yachty as they get.
Yachty as hell, as Eddie would say.
Yachty as hell. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jay Kruska, thank you for being on, sir. And we will talk to you soon.
My pleasure. I hope I didn't expend too much hot air
direction. It was a thrill. Thanks,
all right,
Jay. Thanks
guys.
So much.
All right. Have
Thank
a good
you, Jay.
Night. All right.
Bye,
talk
Jay.
To you.
So I tell you, Joe, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
Jay Kruska. Very, very interesting. I love his humility. Yeah, he's a guy that's had a lot of success, okay? And you'd never know it. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, like he said, but I loved all his self-deprecating remarks about the stuff that didn't sell well. But like he said, if you have other stuff that kind of, it's easy to make fun of yourself when you had successes in other areas,
Well, he won 3 Emmys, didn't he?
3 Emmys?
Yeah. We didn't talk about that.
He's done a lot of scoring. I mean, at the very beginning, we talked about the scoring, and I compared him. I said Steve Picaro is doing the same thing. Did I say Steve Picaro? I'm sure I said Steve Picaro.
Award the nominations.
I hope I didn't say Luca there. He must have. Won a lot. So a lot of the stuff he's done since Maxis has definitely,
Look at that. Gruska has received 3 Emmy Award nominations.
Oh, nominations.
Okay. All right. One Genie Award nomination.
It must be like a advertisement. I don't know. Well, the advertising's other. The
Genie Awards were given out by the Academy of Canadian.
Oh, Canadian.
Yeah, the Academy of Canadian Cinema and Television. Uh-huh. Okay, there we go.
And we spoke briefly about how his kids, Barbara and Ethan, are, well steeped in the music business. I mean, Ethan's on a kind of so they just did something together at first. They were in the band called the Bell Brigade.
Uh-huh.
And Barbara has gone on to play, she played drums, and I think she does stuff for the Foo Fighters, actually. I think she sings with them, or...
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I see some... When I was doing some research, I saw some tight connections with the Foo Fighters, and Ethan is singer-songwriter of the highest caliber. He's really, like, very profound, really, heartfelt stuff he's writing.
Oh, really?
But you can see where it comes from. Jay was great, too. I mean, Jay's...
Yeah, yeah.
Humble and smart, and talented, so you can see where that comes from.
It's funny how the whole thing with Maxis, that he wouldn't think that somebody would be interested, but it's so funny how there's so many people in the yacht rock community that love Maxis.
What I was saying is his resume is so much more than what we really wanted to talk to him about, which was that little myopic little pinhole of the comet, the quick burning comet that was Maxis.
Yeah. He's done a lot of film and television.
Yes. Yeah, you're looking down that list now.
Look at that. Lois and Clark, Charlie Gray's Corner. Look at that.
A lot of that WB stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff that was on the channel.
Sure. Look at that 30-something. Wow.
Wow, that's way back.
Yeah.
That's like late 80s, early 90s, I believe.
Yeah, and he did the David Cassidy, Man Undercover TV series.
And I saw a Sean Cassidy album he had worked on. I mean, I think he penned a tune that they took. I saw that in that list of all his credits.
My favorite moment, you know which one it was. That Black Dahlia.
That was
really co-wrote.
Serendipitous and cool for him. Yes. Let him realize that you liked him genuinely.
Like absolutely.
You sought out his talent in something else, and you had no idea you had a part of it. So it was kind of a genuine appreciation for what he does.
Absolutely. It was great. Great moment.
And I didn't mention, like you said before, he did a lot of stuff with Joseph Williams. They did, I think back in the 80s or maybe early 90s, they did a Chico DeBarge tune called Who Are You Kidding, which I know you're a fan of that.
Yeah.
You would have liked to talk about that. I'm sorry.
I don't know the song, but I do know... I do know what's his name, Chico DeBarge, obviously.
Yeah. And probably it was around the time where, because he was working on that that Q album. Remember that Quincy Jones album around the time?
Chico DeBarge was
involved in that.
You know, I'd love to get on the show, man, would be El DeBarge. I'd love to get El DeBarge.
Is that Chico DeBarge? El DeBarge is Chico DeBarge, or that's completely different?
That's a brother.
Oh, they're brothers. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, if he's got anything to talk about in the yacht rock realm, he'd be glad to talk about it. Why would you have him on if he's not? Does he have yacht rock stuff?
No, he does. He worked with Jake Radin.
Okay.
The El DeBarge album. The El DeBarge from 1986. Producer Peter Wolf and Jake Radin.
Wow.
Yeah, huh?
Okay.
Look, and someone is a very yachty song. The one with I'm gonna start playing the El DeBarge version. I've been playing on Atlantic Coast FM. I've been playing the LaFlex version, which is great. But I'll tell you, El DeBarge's vocals,
So we're definitely gonna delve into the other solo albums that Jay had, because I thought maybe you would have known them. You didn't know anything about those other two. I'm sure there's something on there.
Absolutely.
That we can find, that we can play, and if there is,
I'm
gonna
dive into
it.
I'm going to dive into that later on tonight.
Yeah, one from 74 and one from 84.
Nah, 74 is not going to work. No.
Right,
84,
right, that's
yes.
Right. That's probably, it's got to have something on that.
Nah.
But let's leave everyone tonight as we say goodbye with Let's Play Nobody's Business from Maxis to give everybody a taste of what we were talking about.
Hey, that's a great idea. That's right. And don't forget, folks, download Radio King. and tune in at Atlantic Coast FM. It's Yachty as Hell. And Joe and I will catch you on the next Yacht Rock Show.
Thanks, everybody.
See you. Bye.
Hi, this is Jay Gruska from the band Maxis. Eddie Gans is keeping it real just for you. Next up is another one of my songs. Here's Maxis.
Lying awake, I lay still and I wait, but waiting is all by design. You're asleep by my side, and the number I'm dialing is nobody's business but mine. Secrets that I'll never tell. You thought you knew. One way or another, I hope you discover we're together but always alone. It's your attention and need. Do you have trouble?